So now it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker for the day, Professor Sean Casey. He's a professor of Christian ethics and director of the National Capital Semester for Seminarians at Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. He served as senior advisor for religious affairs for the Obama campaign in 2008 and was national evangelical coordinator in the 2008 presidential campaign as well. He received his Ph.D. in religion and society from Harvard Divinity School, his MPA from the Kennedy School at Harvard. His research interests include ethics and international affairs, the public implications of religious belief, and the intersection of religion and politics. He is the author, most recently, of this terrific book, The Making of a Catholic President, Kennedy versus Nixon, 1960, a book on the state of the religious question during that campaign. He's a member of the American Academy of Religion and serves on its committee on the public understanding of religion. So we're delighted to have Sean come visit us, and we look forward to hearing your talk. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Let me say, first of all, thanks to Eric and to Alan for the invitation to come here. I've admired your work from afar, and I think that the Boise Center here is one of the leading institution of its kind in terms of religion in American public life. And I was telling Eric beforehand, I often come to your website saying, I would really love to come to that talk. I would really love to hear these people, but it's a tough commute. So, but it's an honor and privilege for me to be with you today. I want to do really two things. I want to spend just a few minutes talking about what I found in my research about the 60 campaign, and then quickly segue to the parallels I see and some discontinuities between Kennedy and his approach on religion in 1960 and Obama and his approach to religion in 2008. And then I want to stop to spend the balance of our time back and forth. My major insight with respect to Kennedy in 1960 was that he actually had an evolving, explicit strategy on what they called the religious question of the day. And essentially, Kennedy confronted a form of anti-Catholicism in the general population of the United States that he had never experienced running for office statewide here in Massachusetts. And he was completely flustered by what he encountered. He encountered a species, particularly liberal anti-Catholicism, that certainly was not a dominant position here in the state of Massachusetts. And even Arthur Schlesinger says that he went into a mild depression over the size and scope of that anti-Catholicism when he began to see the contours out there across America. Beginning in 1956, when Kennedy was a last-minute candidate to become the vice presidential nominee for Adlai Stevenson, he put his staff to work on how to knock down the Al Smith argument, which was in 1960 that a Catholic could not get elected to the presidency because of what happened to Al Smith in 1928. And that was, just as we say today, a woman could never be elected president or an African American could never be elected president. That was part of the sort of state of conventional thinking in politics in 1960. What then did Kennedy do? How did he first develop this strategy? Well, one of the things I found out was that he turned to Bishop John Wright, then of Pittsburgh, later was a cardinal called to Rome, and started out as a diocesan priest here in the Boston Archdiocese. Kennedy met John Wright in 1946, and they actually had a relationship from 46 forward. I uncovered an oral history that Bishop Wright had dictated to the Kennedy Museum and had not been unsealed. I was the first scholar to get access to this. So it was a 55-page, single-spaced oral history that Wright gave to the library, which was absolutely a goldmine into Wright's analysis of Kennedy's thinking on his faith. And one of the things that Wright was one of the early ecumenists in the American Catholic Church, so he knew all the major Protestant leaders of his day. He knew them personally. He'd worked with them on a number of projects. So he was able to tell Senator Kennedy, here are the half dozen or so leading anti-Catholic Protestant voices in America that you need to go and meet face-to-face. And Kennedy did a listening tour of these folks, even traveling to Salt Lake City and met with the president of the Mormon Church twice. And I found documentary evidence of those conversations. And so Kennedy would go hand in hand to these people saying, let me get this straight, you're a lifelong Democrat, you don't like Richard Nixon, you support my public policy, but you're not going to vote for me, you're going to vote for that guy simply because I'm a Catholic. Help me understand that. And Kennedy and his brother Robert would take these trips together, and they would go back to Wright and debrief. And one of the fascinating comments that Bishop Wright made was, he said, Robert Kennedy's questions were so much better to me about the experience than Jack's were. He said, Jack would say, well, how can we placate this guy? You know, as if you were, you know, a ward leader here in Boston somewhere. You know, he needs more fire plugs and any more jobs for his folks. I mean, Jack tended to think of political answers. Robert would ask Bishop Wright, what makes these guys tick? Why in their theological configuration do they come out where they do on the so-called Catholic question? And Wright just makes this aside that Robert was actually much more interested in the motivations and in the sort of intellectual side than John was. So what Kennedy did is he went out and he got expert advice. He had no real interest in learning about Protestantism and all the various isms and divisions within Protestantism, but they hired staff who knew that terrain and territory and to give them good advice. And so they, in a sense, applied a form of what I call technical rationality to the problem. They saw it as a political problem. They turned to experts at hand and they got good advice. I mean, they had Ted Sorensen. I mean, they had some pretty smart people around them they could go to help them find the expertise to navigate the Protestant world. Kennedy then, of course, made the famous Houston speech. One of the things I argue in the book, and it's where I probably gotten the most criticism, one of the standard lines of interpretation is that Kennedy, that was a secularizing moment for Kennedy, that he distanced himself from his faith, and he had to do that to win the Protestant vote. I argue that's actually not the case. Two things point me in a different direction. One was John Cogley, who was at that point a staffer. He'd been editor of Commonweal magazine. Cogley said we had to do two things in that speech. One is we had to lower the Protestant blood pressure. But on the other hand, we had to retain the Catholic vote. They knew in order for him to win, he had to win a huge percentage of the Catholic vote, as well as maintain a certain percentage of the Protestant vote. So they couldn't go into Houston and say, oh, forget all this Catholic stuff. You know, I'm not really a Catholic. You know, I've just been pretending. Because they would lose the Catholic vote. So they had to find a way to hold the Catholic voters while they're watching him talk to Protestants. And that proved to be a very difficult thing to do. The second thing is most scholars today only read the transcript of the speech itself, which is about 8 pages long. The transcript of the question and answer session goes to 26 pages. So it's 3 times the volume of the speech itself. And there you actually get him talking more explicitly about his relationship to the church. He invokes John Courtney Murray without attributing that invocation to Murray. But Murray has actually provided him some language to help. And you get a much more nuanced view of how he views his standing in the church in that Q&A session. And when you wrap the two together, I think Kennedy thought he was making a form of Catholic argument. Now, we can argue over how successful he was in that, but I think the notion that he was secularizing in that speech and distancing himself from the church is actually not a nuanced enough position. What was Nixon then doing? Well, Nixon had a strategy that was evolving on religion, and his was really the mirror of John Kennedy's. Nixon thought, up until the convention, that frankly, Lyndon Johnson was going to be the nominee. He didn't think Kennedy was going to win. He just couldn't imagine the Democrats were going to commit suicide in that fashion and put a Catholic at the top of the ticket. He actually thought that Johnson was going to be the top and Kennedy would be the likely vice president. In that sense, the Catholic issue would be less prominent if it were Lyndon Johnson at the top and Kennedy in second. So Nixon has to invent the strategy in June of 1960 because lo and behold, Johnson does not emerge as the nominee, but it is Kennedy. And what Nixon did was hire an operative and put him in the field secretly to gin up as much anti-Catholicism among particularly conservative Protestant preachers indirectly. So Nixon's name is not attached to this, but he's got an operative in the field. And this operative enlists Billy Graham. And Billy Graham is all in. Billy Graham shares his 2 million family mailing list with the Nixon campaign. He writes those 2 million folks saying, vote for Nixon, don't vote for Kennedy, because he's a Catholic. The National Association of Evangelicals was all in because they were recruited by this operative. And Protestants and other Americans, you know, separation of church and state, is all in with their mailing list and their thousands of clergy members. The Kennedys had an informant in the Nixon campaign who told them all of these details. Okay. And it's an 11-page memo. And if you can imagine, presidential campaigns, at least at the periphery, have a deep sense of paranoia about the other guys. That voice is always there. Maybe they know that our innermost secrets. And you sort of think, well, no, they couldn't possibly. But maybe they do. But they couldn't possibly. But they get this informant memo. And they are astonished to see the array of Protestant forces that Nixon is courting and milking to gin up this anti-Catholic campaign. Kennedy was on his first trip, extended campaign trip in September, in California, it was going miserably. And it went off, as one person told me, like a hand grenade on the train when they discovered this information from the informant. Only then did he decide to go to Houston and make the speech the next week. So it was a speech of fear. It was a speech out of deep paranoia that the other guys are doing the worst things that we can imagine. So Nixon had this clandestine strategy. He couldn't go on TV and say, please, please remember, he's Roman Catholic, and we can't vote for a Catholic, so please vote for me on the first Tuesday of November. He couldn't, he couldn't overtly be bigoted in his approach, so he had this clandestine approach. So he tried to woo Protestants without alienating the small sliver of Catholics that he thought he was going to retain. So what are the parallels then between these two, the campaign in 1960 on Kennedy's side and Obama in 2008? I see sort of three areas, and let me run through the list very quickly. The first one I call weakness. The truth is, John Kennedy had weakness with respect to his religion in this overwhelmingly Protestant country in 1960. He applied direct assets to name that. Senator Obama had tremendous weakness. If you had told me in January 2005, the next Democratic nominee would have a middle name of Hussein. At any given time, 15% of the American population would say in polls, we think he's actually Muslim. His pastor has been Jeremiah Wright for the last 20 years. And you've got the religious right just absolutely salivating to have an African-American associated with somebody like Jeremiah Wright. And then you add to that the sad Democratic Party legacy on religion. If you'd asked me what percentage, say, of a white evangelical vote that guy would have gotten, I would have said zero. So there was real weakness, I think, on Senator Obama's side when it came to certain aspects of his faith. There are parallels between Kennedy and Obama in terms of strategy. Both of them built staffs to do religious outreach. And you pretty much have to go from 1960 to 2008 to find any other Democratic nominee who did have a staff to do religious outreach of any size. But they both applied a kind of technical rationality where they said, you know, that there are currents in American religious life that we personally don't understand, but we're going to hire people who can help interpret that for us and get us up to speed in those areas. And so there was a willingness on both of the candidates' part to actually delve into the problem and hire staff to address it directly. They were also both willing to talk to just about anybody. I was astonished to see the range of folks that Kennedy talked to in this listening tour. Likewise, Senator Obama held a number of meetings off the record with religious leaders of incredible diversity, not with any real expectation that they were going to come over to his side, but simply to say, I will talk to you, hoping to start a conversation that will last through my administration. So even though you may not vote for me, you may think my policies are dead wrong, but can we at least have a conversation where we can find a mutually acceptable set of policies? And I was amazed to see that on Obama's part. And the last parallel in terms of strategies, they both saw the speech as a vital tool. And here the parallel between Houston and Philadelphia, I think, is really, really quite interesting. Both of those speeches were given out of fear and in reaction to predicaments they did not create. And all things being equal, neither candidate wanted to give that speech, but felt they had to give that speech given the particularities that evolved in the moment in the campaign. And both of them spoke brilliantly, I think, and in many ways, both candidates saved their candidacy with those single speeches. So they recognized the power of the presidential address, or the candidate's address, as a strategic instrument. And finally, the parallels on the theological level are interesting. Neither Kennedy nor Obama are learned theological intellectuals. And any attempt to paint them in that way are just dead wrong. But at the same time, it's wrong to say they were both purely secular. And that's where the Wright piece actually is very insightful to say, you know, Kennedy, he calls Kennedy a Boston Catholic. And then he unpacks what that means, and maybe we want to kick that around a bit. Obama himself is not a religious intellectual. He's read some Reinhold Niebuhr back when he was an undergrad at Columbia, and, you know, that does not make one a religious intellectual if you've read The Irony of American History or something, even though people in the media now are trying to find these influences of great theologians. Frankly, I don't think it's there. I do think what's most influential in his religious view was his experience on the south side of Chicago working for the Gamaliel Foundation, funded by the Campaign for Human Development, and he saw that religious communities on the ground could actually make a difference in terms of community development and working with the poor. And I think that was formative for his view that religion can be a positive role in American society for good. It's not because he's read Reinhold Niebuhr, but it's because I think of that experience he had in his 20s on the south side of Chicago. Ultimately, they're both church. They were both churchgoers of a sort, and they both were pragmatic when it came to the religious issue. So they were neither purely secular nor, in fact, were they saints. As I tell people, unfortunately, people want to put presidents in either one of two boxes. They want to make them St. Francis, or they want to make them Machiavelli. And the truth is, rarely do you find a president who's St. Francis, certainly. We had a few that were Machiavellian, I think, in religion. But most of them are somewhere in between those two poles. So let me stop there. That's my quick tour, and I'm happy to field any questions you have about these two very interesting characters.